I am a digital artist and illustrator. I've been doing this for over 15 years now, and I specialise in modernising traditional Indian artwork. The artwork that I provide, that's my legacy. That's something that will live on for years to come. So if I can give anything, it's for future generations to understand culture, history, futurism, and be able to feel like they see themselves in the artwork in some way.
Okay, right. So, Vic. Finally managed to get you.
Yeah, finally. After a long time.
Do you know that when I went solo with my podcast back in 2020, I feel like you had a podcast at the time as well.
Yeah.
And I, around that time, made like a list of people that I'd love to interview. And you're on that list.
Yeah.
So I feel like, 3 years on from that? 4 years almost? Finally managed to...
Finally. I'd like to think I'm not that hard to like get hold of and, you know, at least get some time with, but I don't know why. It's maybe some time just gets away from me as well.
Well, you also do a million things.
Yeah, I try to make it seem like I am. Yeah, my parents don't think so.
Well, I want to start off by just saying welcome to Round Game Strong.
Thank you.
It's great to have you.
Yeah, you too.
I'm excited to chat, and I feel like we've got so much to cover.
Yeah.
So, let's get right into it.
Cool.
So, should we start off by maybe tell us a little bit about what we're looking at
here? Yeah, this is one of my most, I'd say one of my favorite pieces. It's hard to actually call a entirely favorite piece. I've got so many, but this is a piece called Aja Sonia, which is one of my favorite songs by B21, mm-hmm. back in the day. If anyone knows, you know. But it's just got this nice aesthetic vibe. It's kind of like, you're cruising with a friend, escaping a little bit,
yeah.
chilling, listening to some tunes. It's one of the things I love to do as well. So yeah, it's just kind of a piece to represent that a little bit.
Mm. I've heard you say previously that you find driving to be quite calming.
Yeah,
for
yeah,
you.
Yeah. I mean, not when sometimes there's people that push a bit of rage, but you know, On days when I need to escape a little bit, driving definitely helps.
You know?
My car's like my second home, so yeah.
Do you feel like it's a big way that you manage, you know, the busy life of working for yourself, basically?
Yeah, it can get a bit, you can get a bit cooped up in the room sometimes, or like, you know, I just generally like to go to coffee shops and work sometimes, but to just take a good break.
Yeah.
Windows down, good music on, bit of bass.
What kind of music?
I'm a bhangra head all the way, but I'm very open to different types of music. Like, music is a big part of my growing up, and just my art process as well. Just it is something that is a part of me. It's still a creative thing as well. I love things like Latin house music, like really cool, quaint stuff, you know, bit of chill step, you know.
Mm.
But yeah, my like old school Hindi, the golden era of like Bhangra as well, you can't go wrong.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you find that you've drawn inspiration from those kind of musical artists in your own work?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think like just to even sometimes illustrate a feeling that you get from music sometimes is like, it doesn't get done often, but I feel like music and art go hand in hand a lot. Whilst I'm doing a lot of artwork, I listen to music or just watch Netflix in the background. But music itself, though, like most people know, brings a lot of people together, conveys a lot of emotion, and I feel like art does the same as well. Mm. Brings people together, can break people apart as well sometimes. You know, really goes deep. So definitely connect with both.
Yeah, and I guess you can also interpret these both of these forms in your own way.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It kind of reflects what you're going through in your life, and you draw what you need out of it.
Yeah, yeah, and also it conveys something else to the audience as well. Like so much for my art, I could feel something whilst I'm making it, but for a mass audience, people that might or might not see it or hear about the artwork through someone else, they could feel something totally different, you know. So I have no control over that, but you know, it's natural and it's genuine.
Yeah, you're the means, right? You're not exactly like dictating what it's going to mean for other people, but you're just creating it for them.
Yeah.
Do people actually reach out to you, telling you how they felt about your work?
Yeah, I think more now than they used to before.
Yeah.
I think it takes sometimes some people a bit of time to open up and go by the, you know, the question that I pose of what if something, or if I represent something that they have never seen before, something that connects with them. Because the artwork that I do nowadays has this kind of feeling of nostalgia and this like futuristic feel to it. And so it gives people a feeling that they can like see themselves within the artwork or something. And when they do, I like when they tell me, you know, because it gives me a feeling of like accomplishment as well, and actually like something that feels nice, like I've done something good. On the other hand, I do also get people that don't like what they see, and fair enough, you know, it, I'm not a people pleaser as such, so
lucky you.
Yeah. I mean I think in any creative form and especially as an artist, I can be very outspoken, and I don't fear what I say, you know. So in that confident sense, even what I portray, yeah, it can be taken in different ways sometimes from people, and when they express that, I respect it, and there's nothing wrong with that, you know. So yeah, each to their own, you know.
Can you share a little bit about maybe any backlash you may have received on any recent one?
I think less recently, but more when I used to do, my focus was on a lot of like religious artwork.
Yeah.
That's where I would have gotten a lot of people saying that this is right and this is wrong, or a certain, I guess, higher up figure shouldn't be seen alongside another. Or I don't know, I had this like piece that I did for Valentine's Day once years ago. And all it was like this Maharaja giving a flower to a Maharani, and it got skewed so much. There were like extreme views on it, like people saying that, oh, this is wrong. You know, a Guruji shouldn't be giving a flower to a Devi or something like that. I'm like, mate, how did it even come to this? You know, but of course I didn't see that. And, you know, for those kind of comments to come through, you have to be a little bit tough skinned sometimes, and you know, it's not always easy, but I think I learned a lot from also in religious artwork, doing enough research to be respectful as well. Because yeah, people choose to see things in the way that they believe it, you know?
Yeah. I think if you're doing any work that's got religious or political connotations, you do come with that. It comes with that additional stress, maybe responsibility of having to deal with the stuff, because you'll have opinions.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's a lot of artwork that just hasn't been created for that reason? Do you feel like there's a loss in this community?
I think people can definitely be a little bit fearful of portraying certain things because they know they're going to get a certain response. And especially when you're doing things like scriptures, and now there's so many different beliefs out there that, yeah, you're never going to be able to be right in any form, you know, because some will always say that, oh, this is incorrect or so-and-so. But yeah, it's unfortunate. I have seen actually some talented artists in the past, like throughout the years, that have unfortunately stopped doing what they're doing as, you know, in a creative form, because of backlash or because they got hate online, you know. And it's unfortunate because, yeah, we lose out on so much talent, you know, because of these, because of people's opinions, you know. Unfortunately, I think that comes down to also persistence being one, and also not worrying too much about what people have to say.
Yeah.
Of course, if you engage in that a lot, it can be hard to deal with for a lot of people.
Yeah. And we do come from a community where we care about these things a lot.
Yeah.
So it's quite hard.
There is a lot of validation around and people searching for, you know, I mean, the number of likes, the number of followers you have, like they will always be wanting to look for that kind of like extra bit of validation from people. And when they don't get it, I think it can be a bit of a hit, you know.
Does that matter to you, that external validation?
I'd say in the past it used to. But I've grown to now understand it's such a side, you know, view now. Like I don't worry about it at all. Nowadays I just upload and leave it to be how it's going to be, you know. I don't try and force it too much. And also another reason why I say it is that, like, I love promoting other artists, and no matter what the number is on their profile page or whatever it is, that does not go in line with the amount of talent that they have, like the artists that they are, you know. I've seen so many like talented artists like grow over time, and it's just nice to see, like, you know. That's how the community should be. But nowadays, unfortunately, the truth is that when there is a potential client looking to get something done, like a commission or something, they will look at the number on your page and then think, they're not worth my money, or they're not valued as, you know, highly as next man who has, I don't know, 10K followers or whatever, you know. So yeah, it is a bit of a race game now, and it sucks.
Yes and no. I agree with you to an extent. What I am seeing now with brands is they are becoming a lot more sensitive to the actual, like, the content of that content. So what I'm trying to say is, yes, there are big brands that just look at numbers and, you know, they're not spending a lot of time doing that research.
But
there are smaller companies, maybe big ones as well, that are looking into, like, okay, so what's the messaging? What's the consistency this person has shown? Word of mouth is massive.
It is, yeah.
Like, I feel like I rely on that a lot. What people are saying about you and how they felt with, you know, working with you or your work. Like, I'm sure... You know, you're so approachable, and what I love about your page the most is that you showcase other artists. I've noticed it's always been regardless of the size of their pages. And you are just generally an approachable person. So I feel like, you know,
I like to come across as,
I think so. I feel like it's nice to find people like that and find ways to keep working with those people, because that's another thing, right? For companies, they don't have the energy to keep looking for people. If there's something that they like, they will come back to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it comes down to that first impression.
Yeah,
you know, and yeah, this is what it comes down to. I mean, I think if I was to get asked for a commission, and I felt like I wasn't able to fulfill that for what the person wanted, I wouldn't just say yes for the sake of the money that's involved. I know so many other artists that would be better suited. I would pass it on to them. You know, so sharing opportunities now as well, like a few times actually last year and the year before, I had a couple of exhibition opportunities, and they just wanted like some other artists, you know, and they also weren't too sure, or like didn't know enough people as well. So I was like, hey, look, here's a few names, people that I've worked with before. They would be amazing. You know, they need the platform, and they deserve to be seen as well, you know. So I think that needs to happen more as well. You know, it's something that is lacking a little bit. But it's happening, you know.
Slowly. Yeah,
progression is there.
It's hard because there are also people who are aware that saying these things is what garners, you know, positive attention and validation. So like me having this platform, saying, you know, we must support everyone else, like, and if I'm not doing that, if I'm not sort of passing on opportunities to, say, other podcasters, or like I dance, and one thing that comes up a lot is, so you've met me in my workplace, and the company that I work for, they're always looking for dance companies and dancers, performers, whatever, workshops. And because I'm not in a company right now, I always deflect the question onto, you know, I say, go to this company, go to that company. And often, like, those people don't really know I'm doing it, but I'm doing it because I know what work is out there. And I don't feel the need to necessarily keep saying that, oh, by the way, like, I've passed this person on to you. I've just done it and hoped that they will reach out. But like, I think if I then didn't do things like that, but then kept saying that, you know, I running a platform where we showcase like South Asian creatives, and it's such a big thing. We don't support each other enough. We must support each other. But I have seen that there is a lot of conversation around that and not enough action.
Yeah.
And it's very easy to get swayed in the conversation, because obviously like that's what we see in the form of reels and, you know, TikToks and everything everywhere. And it's all like super inspiring. And oh my God, we all should. Honestly. And behind the scenes is a different story.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I also feel like I overthink it sometimes. Yeah, and I'm always like, oh, how can we be better?
Yeah. And we never want to come across fake as well. It's like nowadays, most people feel like they have to put it on to then, you know, feel like something's going to be like work. You have to like act in a way, you know, it's like a persona. It's like, why can't you just be yourself these days?
Persona. Yeah.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
But I want to bring the conversation back to you, because we haven't actually heard what it is you do, because you do a lot of things. So
we missed the introduction.
I know, literally this happens every time. But Vic, can you introduce yourself and your work and every aspect that comes with your work?
So my name is Vic Kainth. I am a this is the formal part. Usually you just hear we play doll and then that's it, you just exactly. You just know it's me anyway. But my name is Vic. I am a digital artist and illustrator. I've been doing this for over 15 years now, and I specialize in modernizing traditional Indian artwork. Currently, well, actually in the past, I started off by drawing, sketching, got into digital phase of like doing portraits of certain celebrities and religious artwork. Nowadays, I'm going more into storytelling of kind of like Maharajas, Maharanis, more original kind of like retro futuristic and nostalgic desi artwork.
Why is this style the one that you've stuck with?
It's you know, saying actually stuck with, I think I've kind of grown into this style a little bit, but it's a style that has taken me a long time to get to know. And I think like for myself, that journey to get there has been quite nice, because I feel like it's my style now, and when people see the artwork, they do recognize it as something that I have done without me even having to put my name on it. And that's a big kind of like win.
That's such a win.
Because
I can recognize your artwork a mile away. Is art something you wanted to do your whole life? Did you know as a kid?
I think I knew quite early on, because I was always drawing, and even let's say, you know, when I was really young at school, and we had to pick out a book from the library, I would never get like a story or a novel or something like that. I'd get like books on how to draw this and that, and like cars and buildings and stuff like that. So I think I always knew that is something that I love to do, you know. And if it wasn't that, I think I would do something music related.
Music.
I do a bit of production on the side. I mean, like, I'm quite fortunate. When I was younger as well, my parents, you know, kind of like took us to, me and my sister, to like guitar classes and piano classes and stuff like that. I still teach myself piano here and there. Learned dabla for about 3 years.
Wow.
Played dol on the side. But that's why I think like getting into like my old ustad that taught me tabla, I learned a bit of music production from him. So I think that's something that I would have gotten into a bit more.
So a very creative childhood.
Yeah.
And was it always encouraged by your family members, you know, for you to pursue this?
I think encouraged in different ways.
Yeah.
Not your normal way of like, well done, do it. It was kind of like, I don't know, very, very odd. I don't think that's what they wanted me to do. Just a hunch. But my family show kind of support in their own way, which is quite nice. Like my dad, I don't know whether he doesn't know how to change his phone wallpaper, but it's one of my first Maharanis that I actually designed. And it's still his wallpaper. And my mum likes to help package some of my artwork sometimes with me. So sometimes we get like that kind of support. It's not said verbally sometimes, but you just know, innit? So, and also, you know, like things that happen, you know, when like family comes over, they're always very proud and say, you know, Vic made this, Vic did this for Gurdas Maan, and he was on, did stuff for Marvel. And I'm like, you can say that to me as well.
Such a classic parent thing.
Yeah.
They're all the same.
Yeah.
And where did you grow up?
I was born and bred in Barking.
Barking.
Yeah, there's a whole song on it.
You don't want me singing.
Yeah, no, no, no. I don't think I should either. but yeah, born and bred in Barking. I went to Barking Abbey and did well GCSE art over there.
Okay.
And then as education followed, I went to Birmingham City University to do art and design.
Would you say that you had a natural knack for it? Do you think you were good at it when you were younger?
I think I had a somewhat natural talent for it, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was always more to learn. I definitely watched The Simpsons too much because I ended up just knowing how to draw them. And it was funny because, like, even in school, and this is like going, you know, these are like sometimes memories that I put in on the back burner as well. You know, like, kids used to like ask me to like doodle in their workbooks on their covers and stuff. Sometimes it always used to be like skulls and flowers and Michael Jackson or Spider-Man or something like that. And it's so random.
Did you ever draw that weird S thing?
Yeah. Oh, everyone did it. Yeah. Once you learn how to do that, you're certified. That's it. You know. But yeah, that it was always I think something that I had a knack for. Yeah.
Okay. So then going on to obviously you went to university to pursue this. And we've talked a little bit about your style and you've mentioned Maharanis. And I wanted to kind of hone in on that because that's such a niche.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask what they actually represent for you.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it means so much to other people. For myself, though, I used to like, I love researching different cultures and styles of art. And I think one of the things that kind of led me to it is when I used to look at like kind of like the Mughal era of artwork and where there was kind of like drawings on or murals etched into like walls and stuff like that, kind of a bit like hieroglyphics. But there were always like Maharanis and these beautiful women that were portrayed in these kind of pictures and paintings. And it's like ancient Indian artwork and like these women were in there, but they were often kind of like portrayed not with a lot of clothes on, serving men a lot of the time, dancing for them, etc. I was like, I don't know, it feels a bit very one-sided, a little bit sexist, I don't know, you know, but back in those days, life was very different.
Yeah.
But I felt like when I portray like Maharanis now, and the modern Maharani as well, it's like our females of today, you know. Everyone's different, everyone's got their own flair, their own loves and hates, and to kind of like just show them in their natural habitat a little bit and storytell. I've grown up with so many female friends that tell me stories and tell me their experiences and stuff like that. And I think it's just nice to kind of like show how vast it is and also some truths as well, you know, that not many people like to be aware of or just kind of like ignore a little bit, you know. So yeah, I think for me, I love portraying like different styles of Maharanis, the outfits, the details that go into the emotion that goes into it as well. You know,
Yeah, I think what I get out of it as a kind of modern day woman myself, what you talked about with, you know, like ancient artwork and, and like the women of those times were a lot more like, let's say more submissive. And, you know, they were kind of serving the men, wearing less clothes, whatever it is. I think the Maharanis that you represent are very much owning themselves and their own sensuality, and they're confident.
Yeah.
And like you said, they're just being.
Yep.
And I think that's very empowering.
Yeah.
I feel like without even having to really overtly give a message, what you're saying is like, this is what women are like today, and more and more. So I think that resonates with a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I guess my follow up from that would be, do you actually have like a lot of women that reach out to you following any releases of these pieces?
It's interesting. I mean, obviously, I do Maharaja artwork as well. Yeah, so like males as well as females. I do get people reaching out, and I think majority of my following is female.
Yeah.
Because of the women that I design. I'd say empowering is the right word that you use though as well, because that is something that I want to maintain in my artwork. I want to be able to empower people, you know, to feel like, to give them kind of like this royal aesthetic.
Yeah.
Feels nice. It feels comforting, and it shows others that this is what our culture is, you know, culture is so important, and we can mix up these cultures too as well. Like I've done so many Maharanis that have a bit of a crossover in terms of like I don't know, race or belief or something that kind of like aesthetically you wouldn't think is normal, which, you know, is nice, because the people that feel like they're a bit different feel like they're also represented as well. So yeah, it's important to do that, and I think people do reach out, and I wouldn't say so much that people buy the artwork. They often want pieces done for themselves, commissions, right, and stuff like that, like wedding portraits, etc. It's something to keep, and it's something special, you know. It's quite nice how much appreciation it gets. You know, and people do know me for designing Maharanis.
Do you think it's worth the time and effort
if
for example, aren't getting as many sales of your work?
No matter the amount of sales, I would still be doing this. Like even if I often have no commissions on, sometimes some months are like that. There are some days where it's a bit dry on the kind of like commission front, which is absolutely normal and fine when being a self-employed artist, but it gives me time to work on personal artwork as well.
Yeah.
I've got a list of things to go through, you know, like people that I want to portray or ideas that I have, or ideas that are given to me as well, you know. So it's nice to kind of like spend a bit of time doing that, and that time is absolutely 100% worth it. Yeah.
So what is your process actually like from ideating to the final product?
I'd say again, I know I said research quite a few times, but research is so, so important. I'd love like finding different poses, images, and kind of like just even photography that has like colors that I'd like to use in a piece. And so to kind of like collage something together, then sketch it, I use a like digital medium to even sketch as well. So I use a Huey on tablet. So I would sketch that out and then leave it for a bit, let it simmer in my head. If I like it, cool. I'll add little bits to it. Yeah, exactly. You know, it helps kind of like to step away from it sometimes. And then I use multiple layers, which are all individual layers, to build up the image. And in doing that, I have control over the artwork. I don't overthink it too much, but yeah, sometimes it can go up to like 1,000+ like layers, and it's ridiculous. Like if I look at, sometimes I wonder, how do I manage all the layers that I have? But somehow, you know, I've kind of gotten used to it, and I got used to my process that I actually get through it quite at a good pace now these days. I think before, I would say maybe about 5-6 years ago, I would think too much about what color I'm using, or how many layers there are, you know, and maybe stop at a point where I thought it's enough. But nowadays I'm like constantly improving to add more shading, add more depth, you know, more highlights, so that it just elevates, you know, every new piece.
$1 million question: do you label your layers?
I do now. I color them and I label them. I label the groups.
You're getting old. That's what it is.
Honestly, like you forget sometimes, but somehow, like, because it's my layers and like I know the Photoshop file.
Yeah.
I know where everything is. It's weird. Like, yeah, if I give it to a different designer, they'd probably think
they'd be lost. Mess.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, nowadays I think it's good to group and name things.
Be organized.
Yeah.
So you talked about obviously the process of creating. How does it work then? Well, firstly, how long does it take you to make one? But also then, do you plan like what day you're going to release it? And do you get those nervous jitters of like, oh my God, this new thing is coming out?
I'd say time-wise, 2 to 3 days if I'm not distracted. Mm-hmm. And I'm only working on that piece. Depending on the number of people or the kind of detail in the background of the piece, it can go up to anything like up to a week. And it has done in the past. And sometimes it's weird because the pieces that sometimes I won't spend a lot of time on do better than the pieces that I spend weeks on. And I'm like, oh.
How do we feel about that?
I don't, you know what? It is a bit like, oh, putting all this time and effort and no one likes it.
Mm.
You do, that does cross your mind. You're only human, it's natural. But also, now, like when it comes to, yes, the excitement of uploading things, I'm still excited to upload it. I'm still excited for people to see it. I know there's this rule of like, you know, 33% of people will see it, 33% of people will love it, will either love it or hate it, you know. There's like this balance and I'm cool with that, you know. I've come to terms with that. And even if I take, you know, one day to create a piece and it does good or bad, it is what it is. Like, people, whoever has seen it was meant to see it, or, you know, the response to it, you know. I kind of embrace that, you know, and let that be. I think, what was the second part of the question?
So the question was, do you still feel nervous and excited when you release a piece? And also, do you schedule it? Do you know what day it's going to go out?
Yes. So actually, now I do a bit more scheduling.
Yeah.
I think in the past I didn't so much. It used to be like, okay, cool, it's ready, it's done, I want to upload it now.
Yeah.
You know, and also algorithm changes now as well quite a lot. So early days, I used to upload every day, like show the sketch, show the line work, show the final piece. Nowadays it's come down to like almost, I don't know, 2 or 3 times a month I'll upload a piece. Or once a month, if, you know, depending how busy I am with commissions.
Yeah.
So at the moment, though, I have worked on a whole new series that is going up, which actually went up at 6 a.m. today, the first one, which wasn't meant to.
Right? Decon Desi?
Yeah. And it's funny because I scheduled it yesterday and it was supposed to go up at 6 p.m. today.
Yeah.
but it went up at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
So I woke up and I looked at my phone. I was like, oh. That's fine.
Yeah, scheduling rookie you are.
Yeah. So I've got that now scheduled for the rest of the month, and those pieces are ready to go.
Tell me more about them, because I saw you released it last night, or you talked about it last night, and it was all about sort of changing it up.
Yeah.
So what's inspired you to now change your style a little bit?
I feel like, and I've spoken about this before, where there's transition periods through kind of like the creative process, being an artist as well, just myself. And I always want to experiment and try things that are new. The last time I kind of like changed my whole style was when something really bad happened, where my car got broken into and everything got stolen.
I remember that.
Yeah, that was not a good time. But then I came back from that with a whole new style, stuff like this, that led me to kind of like really find myself again. And this is a bit of an experiment. I'm not getting away from what I normally do, but it is very different from what I normally do. It still has the same essence and the same kind of moral behind it.
Yeah.
Gets very cryptic, very deep. But I kind of saw, again, I like to be inspired by many things, many other artists as well. Mm. And I did see that this kind of style is picking up a little bit around Instagram. So I was like, cool, how can I kind of like mold this to kind of like merge with my style of artwork, you know, as well at the same time, and give this that Desi touch. And yeah, that's what will be coming out.
So, how exciting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Yeah.
So what actually does the name mean?
So it's seen as a style of deconstructed design.
Okay.
So I thought Decon Desi just sounded sick. Yeah. So yeah, I kind of just went with it, and I was like, you know what, it sounds like mysterious. And it's, if anyone, see, no one's asked me that question yet, so even now I'm probably waffling a little bit, but I'm trying to figure out the answer myself. But that's the thing, even with a lot of things that I name my artworks or the captions, I don't think about it too much. I love poetry and I love things that have deeper meaning to them. And when I write something, and if it is a story or a caption or some sort of poetry to go with the artwork, it's very natural. And I like to just let it out, you know, and people receive it very well. But then I would ask them back, what does Decon Desi mean to you? I don't know. Like, does it sound cool?
Yeah,
if it sounds cool, then sick. Like, you know, you're gonna find out what it, what the artwork is about to go with it, you know.
To me, it was cool and confusing and equal parts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's what it's meant to be, right?
Yeah,
art is
yeah.
not meant to be like
yeah.
drawing within the lines, colouring within the lines.
And you'll see actually how confusing it is. It absolutely fine, because the artwork and the style that you'll see, you will see, is very like weird and cryptic, and you'll see a lot of numbers and shapes, and you know, you can interpret that in so many different ways yourself, which is quite special. So I'll see how it gets received, you know. And again, it's one of them things that I'm not fearful of, because it will go totally against the grain of my how my page looks at the moment.
Yeah.
It's a part of me as my journey as an artist. I'm going to, you know, put it out there.
Yeah.
Which I encourage.
I'm glad to hear that you've sort of like started breaking through your own boundaries.
Yeah. I mean, I have an OnlyFans, so I think I broke.
You do?
Yeah. Did you not know this?
What, an OnlyFans of yourself?
No.
Or of your artwork?
This is such a good conversation starter, because sometimes people don't expect it and they think I'm joking.
No, I don't think you're joking. I just had no idea.
Long story that goes actually, that leads up to it. I know it's a very funny one, but it's also a very, it was a serious one that led me to make that decision. It's not something like I just thought, cool, I'm just making OnlyFans. No, that's not a normal thing for an Indian guy to do.
Yeah.
You know, so I had a piece called Breathe ages ago, which got taken down by Instagram and Meta. And I, it wasn't a, there wasn't any like nudity in this piece or anything like that, but it was a very empowering piece, which is why there was quite a big uproar from a lot of my following when it got taken down.
Yeah.
The first time it got taken down after 2 months, and the second time it got taken down literally the next day. And both times I appealed to Meta and Facebook at the time about getting it reinstated and stuff, and it got pushed aside. Like, I got no response, no reply. And this piece was very, very like special. I'd say it was not the easiest thing to look at for a lot of like older generation, but for newer generation to understand it, and the caption that went with it was like probably one of my best things that I've ever done, and I don't regret doing it. But also because it got taken down, and I think it got mass reported when a lot of things were happening in India at the time.
Okay.
There were a lot of things getting reported that weren't even offensive.
Yeah.
But because they were empowering of an empowering nature of females, it got reported and taken down. So I thought, you know what? I ain't here for that. Like, no one's, you know, I hate suppression, and when, you know, someone says that you can't do something, the system is flawed in so many different ways. But I was like, nah, this is something that needs to be seen and deserves to be seen. And for the people that want to, it's free. There you go. There you go. It's on there. And so I do erotic Indian artwork.
Okay.
That's what it is for. But it's just because not many people know that they can get that kind of stuff done as well. It is obviously very private artwork.
Yeah.
It's just to actually, it's out of appreciation of doing something that is more, even more of a niche.
Mm.
So it's like, Desi Indian erotic artwork that is tasteful.
Yeah, I mean, there must be such a market for that. Yeah. And
there's a market for anything these days. Yeah,
that is very true. Yeah. Oh my God, that sounds so interesting. Do you have a lot of people who follow you on OnlyFans?
Not so much. I don't upload on there a lot.
Okay.
It's only the kind of artwork that I do when I really, really have like really a lot of spare time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not my priority artwork to do.
Okay.
But yeah. The main thing is that the first post on there was the piece that got taken down.
Yeah.
So yeah, for that
the meaning behind how it started. That's so interesting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So rogue question, because it just popped in my head. People often think artists are a bit wacky.
Mm.
Do you think that's true?
Define wacky.
Just out of the ordinary, right? Thinking outside the box, not really fitting into or conforming to society standards.
Yeah.
Somebody that people might think is a little bit weird. I don't know. Like,
I think we might get seen like that. And I think we like that though as well. We're okay with that because we know as artists that, you know, we can be ourselves and we can be someone else if we wanted to. It's very much like not worrying too much about how we are seen. But if people like it or dislike it, it's okay. We're not everyone's cup of tea, you know. So I remember actually I was doing an exhibition where I had some of my Guruji pieces next to me at Vesakhi at Trafalgar Square. And I was standing next to it just nicely, just waiting, you know, people coming by, you know, saying, have a look at the artwork. Just looking at it and they're like, oh yeah, this is a couple of, you know, like an old couple. They were looking at it, you know, they said, oh, it was very nice, blah, blah, blah. You know, and I was like, hi, I'm the artist. They're like, oh, they looked at me. They're like, oh, I was like, yeah, I have tattoos. I have piercings. I know.
Is that why they were surprised?
That's why they were surprised. Yeah. And so it's not maybe sometimes what people expect.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
People often look at me and expect that I smoke and drink. Not that anything, you know, like that is bad or I say not to do, but they would assume certain things.
Yeah, you know, like you have tattoos, you must smoke and drink and party and all that. Yeah.
I think party. Yeah.
on the flip side, I think you'll have a lot of unassuming people who do things that you wouldn't think because, you know, and that's fine too.
Yeah.
We're all about breaking through stereotypes.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And I'm not ever worried about being judged on those things as well.
Mm.
You know, I can't ever convince someone to think otherwise of me. So.
And you are Sikh by religion.
I'm Hindu Punjabi.
Hindu Punjabi, so you're not Sikh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know why I assume that.
So this is the thing though.
Do people assume that about you?
People assume it because
there you go.
So my surname is Ganth, but it wasn't originally Ganth, it was Kumar. So Vikram Kumar, that's my full name. My artist name is Vik Ganth. So very nice story actually how the tattoos did start. My granddad and the Pind that we came from in Punjab, because our culture is Punjabi, the Pind name has Ganth there. So my granddad's name had Ganth as a surname, and but it just didn't get passed down properly. When my granddad passed away, he passed away on my birthday when I was 10. Mm-hmm. And I got his name tattooed on my back. That's my first tattoo when I was 18.
Mm.
And we also... myself and my cousins, my sister, we all changed our surnames to Ganth. So Kumar and Kumari are like our middle names that we don't really use much anymore. But that's why I made sure that, like, identity wise, I want to be like, I embrace Sikhi a lot.
Mm.
And even though I might not look like your typical, like, Sikh or, you know, I mean, everyone.
You do wear a gara?
I do, yeah. Choosingly, I wear a gara. I used to have an om ring like ages ago. I wear punjab around my neck, you know.
Yeah.
So these kind of things are all part of me and my identity, you know. Mm. And I embrace the music a lot as well. So these are all parts of, you know, myself. And yeah, so that's why I keep Vic Ganth as my artist name. So, you know, again, another little story to tell, but yeah, that tattoo is very special. It stays on my back, then my grandma's hair, and then all the art.
And then it opened the floodgates. And
yeah,
it's fully tattooed.
Yeah,
99% tattoo you are.
I think I'm about, I don't know, maybe 40%.
That's
pretty good.
I don't have one yet, and my mom would kill me. But
you know what? This is the thing, though. Just get it and come home. It's fine.
Do you think? Yeah. I mean, there's nothing anyone can do, right, exactly, by that point. Yeah. No, I think my fear is more around, like, what if I learn to just not like it over time? Or what if I start, you know, as I get older, it starts sagging and it's,
yeah,
I don't know, all so sorts
of that's things. Normal and natural. But I try and encourage people to say, to think, if it is your first tattoo, it has to be something really meaningful to you.
Yeah.
You know?
But what is meaningful?
That's what you have to figure out.
Forever. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Because
meaning changes for me.
Of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think that's why it's nice that you've got different ones, because I guess, like, it's different parts of your life and, you know, phases that you've been through, which is kind of nice.
And a lot of it is my own artwork as well. So for me, like, knowing that it's something that I've created and it's something that will live on, that is, you know, a part of me. So that's cool. If anyone ever asks me if I'm ever serious about being an artist full time.
Look at his arms. Yes. Oh, well, I want to touch on, the hot topic these days, which is AI. Mm-hmm, and I know you've talked about it a little bit. Rogue conversation change. But I think the reason why it's important to discuss it is because there is so much stuff around, like, digital art and AI and that's going to replace, you know, all digital artists and all of that. So, like, what do you have to say about that?
There's a lot to it.
We need another hour.
I think we do. Part two coming. I mean, AI, I wouldn't say I'm entirely against it. I've learned to kind of, like, utilize it in a way that is it becomes a tool rather than a final piece. Now, the problem, the, like, where it kind of becomes an issue where people say that it's going to take over from artist jobs, I don't ever believe it will. Because if you're going to, I don't know, if a client believes that they can ask AI to portray the emotions of two people hugging without having 10, you know, 10 million fingers and skewed eyes, then great. You know, these are little details where people don't realize that AI will be flawed on at the moment, and maybe for a long time to come, because it's always learning. I would say that I've utilized ChatGPT in great ways, like for idea generating, and also help me out with my captions sometimes as well, coming up with a storyline for a Maharani that I've designed, and it's quite nice in that way. But even then, I don't think it will ever take over. It's just, if it's used as a tool, I think it's greatly used. And I do see a lot of pages pop up now that are doing very well, that are all just AI generated artwork. It does make you sometimes think, okay, but how much effort really went into that, you know?
Well, have you heard of that influencer who's completely AI?
There are a lot of influencers that are fully AI. And it's creepy. I think it is a little bit weird, because imagine you're feeding into and following something that doesn't actually exist. You know, it's not real.
But
don't we do that on a daily?
I challenge you that, because we are
doing that. We do that on a daily, exactly.
Like, my online persona is not me.
Yeah.
So
it's odd. We, like, without knowing, we do give into it. I don't know if you've seen The Social Dilemma.
I have.
Yeah. So it's kind of like that. We do it without even realizing.
It's true.
So it's hard to say, but there are these things that are listening around us all the time, and it's all forms of AI, isn't it? So
Well, it's wild, isn't it? Because when we were all growing up, there was this whole thing of, like, oh, it's going to be robots are going to take over the world. Nobody said that we would be the ones turning into robots.
Yeah.
So In terms of like the specifics of it though, I've heard that like apps such as Midjourney take a lot of existing artwork and some of it is, I don't know if this is true, but stolen and almost like without consent used to train the AI bots.
Yeah.
Do you know much about that? And do you feel like based on that, the AI could actually get good enough to replace, say, you entirely because it has access to all of your work?
I don't know too much about it. And I've done enough research to understand it in my own way.
Yeah.
But I do believe that, yes, it has access to an entire like mass database of other artists' artwork, music as well. Like, come on, people are cloning voices as well. You know? Like, where is the copyright level there? Where can people stop? Or where does it stop? You know, there is no limit to it. I don't think you can actually obtain copyright over a style as such. So artwork and specifics, yes. And I believe that, like, I've as an independent artist, I've had to learn certain like laws about intellectual copyright and et cetera, and what actually then voids someone's saying, you know, that they've just used the same artwork and changed a few bits. You have to change at least, I think, 6 prominent things that are within the artwork to then have it not be the same art, same piece. So there's really little kind of like discrepancies you can get through, and maybe little wormholes, but it's a tough game because people will actually, you know, bring up a whole like thing saying that, you know, this AI stole my work, my style, blah, blah, blah. You know, then who are you suing? Who are you going to go against? Who are you going to tell that they can't do that? It's AI. You know, it's like this mass developed, like, I don't know, third party company or something like Midjourney or DALL-E and stuff like that, that actually like utilize like basically a mass database that's already out there. It's out there in the, you know, on the internet. So how can you actually stop it?
Yeah.
It's hard sometimes. And it comes down to also feeling like actual people stealing artwork, that is a thing as well. Like,
physically, it's happened. Stealing.
Yeah.
Has it happened to you?
Oh, it's happened so many times. Really? Yeah. Like, I remember I was like, I'm just getting on with a piece. Or I wake up and someone's DM'd me like a picture of, there was this jewelry store in India, in Punjab.
Classic.
That had my Maharanis plastered over their walls. And I looked at it and some of them are cropped. Some of them are really badly printed.
Or like they add a filter on it and it goes weird. Yeah.
And they're like framed in this really cheap looking framing as well. And I'm like, oh my God, why? And then I had to like DM these like the owners of the place. This happens with restaurants as well, you know, in different parts of the world. And I had to like, luckily I've got people that do tell me, you know, eventually someone will go there and see it and recognize that it's my work and tell me about it. And it's happened a few times now and it's frustrating. But now there used to be this way of approaching it in the past where the only way to get someone's attention was to just out them on social media.
Tag them. Yeah. Like you.
And then, unfortunately, this is a really bad way to do things. Don't do this. Just, you know, your followers just go at them. But that's not the right way to do it.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's about educating these people and saying, look, I'm an independent business owner. You know, like you have to go around the right routes, the ways to do this.
Mm.
You know, I can sell you the artwork. I'll send it to you. I'll make sure it's like installed properly, etc. And that has worked now these days. Like that is the way to go about it.
Okay.
Unfortunately, you do get the odd ignorance from certain people that they're like, oh well, it's there. I didn't know I had social media kind of managers do it. We didn't know the source of it. I'm like, if you don't know the source of something, you maybe shouldn't be using it.
Yeah. I think a lot of people just think they have like unlimited access to whatever's out there, right?
Yeah.
I had this because, well, when I, as in not myself, but when I initially on the podcast page, I used to reshare a lot of artwork. And I've always tagged the artist, and I've always put it in the caption. It's always so caption important and tag. And then there was a time where one artist reached out and was like, oh, you've not asked for my consent. And then I took it down. But it was almost just like, if I waited and sat around, and lots of them don't reply or they don't see it. In my head, if I'm doing it with respect, then I think 99% of them have been okay with it. They've actually said thank you for sharing, but also because it's an audience that does kind of like to learn about new artists. So in my head, I'm like, I'm showcasing new artists.
You're helping.
But for a long time, I felt guilty about it because I was like, well, it's not my own art, and I've not necessarily like reached out to get explicit consent. So there's a bit of a blurry line there, isn't it?
I don't know. I guess, I mean, I've definitely experienced that as well, where certain pages have just shared the art and tagged me. And I'm like, cool, thank you. Like, I just drop a comment saying, you know, I appreciate it. But if it's used in a way that I didn't intend on, then it's different.
Or if it's manipulated, right?
This has happened. Like, a couple of my pieces, a couple of my really like well-known pieces. One is of a Maharani laying down, called Jori Jori Jupike Jupike. And a piece that is also of five gods holding hands have gone to, I don't know what ends of the earth it's gone to, but like these spiritual pages have been like sharing these pieces, these two pieces, with some text on top of it, which doesn't really go by the moral of what the actual artwork is meant to be and what it means. But I've kind of like, I'm too late to the game a little bit. Like, they've already gone and shared it, and they have mass amount of followers that I can't keep track of how many times it's been shared anymore. So it's kind of like just having to be like, all right, cool. I'll get to the root of it first and just let them know that, look, this is my artwork. You've been sharing it, etc. Just tag me. You know, it's fine. I don't mind it. But yeah, I have to just accept it sometimes. But yeah, it is annoying though sometimes when like I've spent time to do so much like beautiful Guruji artwork and, you know, Sikhi and kind of like Hindu artwork that gets shared onto these pages that have, again, hundreds of thousands of followers, and they just slap their own tag over it on top of it. And I'm like, what made you feel like you can do that, you know?
It's straight up copying you.
Or just taking the artwork and basically just like putting it up as their own.
Yeah, you know? Claiming it as their own.
Yeah.
Ah, people. Okay, well, I wanted to ask you a bit about community, because we did touch earlier about you kind of making sure that other artists also get a spotlight. How important is that community to you individually in your process? Like, do you have friends who are illustrators and artists that you constantly bounce off ideas, that kind of thing?
I mean, a community, that's what it's all about. That is, creativity and culture is all built on that. And I feel like from myself doing certain exhibitions and commissions where I've learned a lot, I've lost a lot, and also being able to kind of like just gain knowledge. I have that knowledge to share as well, you know. So even recently, when we were at Deloitte doing an exhibition, so many new artists were exhibiting, friends of friends, and like talented painters, talented photographers, people that I've known for ages. And they just, this is like their first chance exhibiting, even at Versace on the Square as well, is such a good way for new artists to get seen. And I'm just there like, cool, I'm like, it's fine. I just want
it's
you
not
lot
my
to,
first rodeo.
I just want you lot to like smash this, you know? And it's nice because they do, and I get to see it. And also, if they have any questions, I'm here like, right, do you need a spare easel? Do you need this? Do you need that? I'm like, cool, don't worry about me. Like, I want to make sure you're good, you know, but it's a nice way to share and learn at the same time. And I myself learn so much from them as well, which is like so special, because I know I have to always remain teachable, you know, in these senses. Like, I can't say that, oh, I know someone might come to me and say that, Vic, you've done this loads of times. I'm like, yeah, I have, but there's always something that I do a little bit wrong, but there's always something to learn as well, you know, from doing certain things at exhibitions, because each one's a bit different. So you know, it's nice. You kind of like just join forces a little bit, and it's a good feeling.
Stronger together.
Yeah.
Right. And I think also there's a lot to learn from younger minds.
Yeah.
They think so differently.
Yeah.
It baffles me on a regular basis. Like I work.
They have less limitations.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Less fears. Yeah. Less self-doubt. I think less of an identity crisis, the kind of stuff that we literally talk about all the time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. My mum works in a school. So she got me to come and like do a little exhibition for the kids once. And I love doing this because I have done this a few times now where they're just like wowed by what they see. And they ask me the most genuine, like kindest questions. And I think it's so like giving, even I think, oh, like that's so pure, you know, like, yeah, it just feels nice that there's more open-minded young minds, you know, and also parents that encourage them to do more creative things now these days.
Absolutely. Huge benefit, so I think, nowadays. I feel like we could talk forever. But
I don't want to look at the time.
Don't worry, I've kept an eye on it. I feel like we've touched on so many different topics and this idea of community and just all the wonderful messaging that you're putting through in your art. And also this new launch, very exciting. Yeah. Where do you actually see Vic Kenth as a brand in the next 10-ish years?
I've been thinking about this more. I don't often even plan my next day or my next week. So it's hard for me to even say because there's so much which I can't, like, I mean, you never know what's going to come across tomorrow, you know, what phone call I'm going to get, or there might be something that sets me back a little bit.
Yeah.
But where I would love it to go and what I see happening is I would love to open exhibition spaces and studios for like younger artists. Because for myself, when doing exhibitions in the past, they were always self-funded. Like I used to do door gigs constantly to just save up and then, you know, spend it on, you know, a weekend of exhibition, you know, and stuff like that for myself. But and I would do this for the sake of, you know, being able to showcase the talent and give kind of like younger artists a space to feel like that's their home as well, you know. So I would want that to be a global thing, not just in the UK.
Oh.
And definitely, I think I could see myself moving to somewhere like New York or Canada because I feel like creativity just there is so much more accepted as well. Not to say that it isn't here, but I think it is just saturated as a whole. It's so hard to stand out. But I feel like I wouldn't just want to stay in one place. You know, I love traveling with my artwork. And I think, there's nothing stopping me from doing that. So I think, I don't know whether that's going to happen in 5 years, 10 years, however, you know, many years it takes. It's taken me 10 years of being an artist even to actually feel like I can say that I've actually like made it, you know, or say that I'm actually happy with where I'm at. And that comes down to, you know, the passion as well, the level of passion, you know.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Wow. All the best with it.
Thank you.
I look forward to seeing it. Yeah. And my last question for you is, Vic, what do you have strong game in?
See, I've never been asked that question as well. I would say being able to give people confidence in seeing themselves in a whole different like form, you know. I don't know if that's a right answer or a bad answer.
There's no right but or wrong.
Yeah, I feel like I like the artwork that I provide is here to stay for a long you know, that's my legacy. So that's something that will live on for years to come. So if I can give anything, like, is for future generations to females and males to understand culture, history, futurism in our culture as well, and be able to feel like they see themselves in the artwork in some way.
How beautiful is that?
Yeah.
I think you're doing it.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. And may you continue to do so.
Yeah.
Thank you. May you continue to uplift other voices, because I think that is your strength as well.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Brown Game Strong. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you'd like to stick around, then please do hit the subscribe button if you're listening on YouTube. And do give the social links a follow as well. We're on Instagram and on TikTok. If you have any thoughts, feedback, advice, any potential guests that you'd like to hear me speak to, then please do drop a note on either the socials or on browngamestrong@gmail.com. Thank you once again for listening, and really appreciate your support.